everyone, and welcome to another episode of the ECCDC podcast. I'm your host, Jeanette Wilson, and I'm here in conversation with Christy Scarrow, who is the managing partner at the Lighthouse 9 Group, as well as being an author, podcaster, and TED Talk speaker. Join us as we discuss how organizations can work towards building a culture of accountability. Christy shares real-life examples of accountability in practice, as well as tools and resources that programs and educators can draw upon in their quest to build a culture of accountability. Whether you're a frontline educator, supervisor, or executive director, there's something in this podcast for you. Good morning, Christy. It's lovely to have you here with me today to engage in conversations around how early learning and childcare programs can build a culture of accountability. So, good morning and welcome, Christy.
Thank you, Jeanette. Lovely to be here.
Great, thank you. So, can you start off our conversation this morning sharing a little bit about yourself with our listeners?
Absolutely. Well, I got connected with ECCDC because I was working with your groups and your members and trying to understand through the survey some of the ways in which I knew that were important to the centers and the leaders there. So in working with, you know, ECCDC with the member survey, I mean, certainly what I found is, I think, a good understanding of what's important to the members, but also just I'm personally really impressed by the work that you do, because I can recognize the support behind it. And, you know, I do a lot of surveys for clients as part of my work. And I just a shout out to the fact that your members really clearly see that value. So I do appreciate being part of the conversation with you today, Jeanette, because I know the kind of value you offer to your members as well. And I'm a managing partner at Lighthouse 9 Group. We do a lot of work with leadership development. What I love is the kind of the messy bits of leadership, that idea of, you know, recognizing it's really challenging to lead and even to work within teams with people. I mean, the people side of what we do is why we do it, but also some of the challenging bits. So for me, I just love that opportunity. And for how it shows up for me at work is as a trainer, as a consultant, as a speaker, and then also I'd say as a mom, right? I have got three kids who are now teenagers, and I think, you know, accountability, especially working with teenagers, has definitely always been a challenge and something I'm passionate about. So that's a little bit about me.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that with us. So I'm really excited about our conversations. You have that connection with the ECCDC as well, which is really, really great. So if we could dive straight into our topic of conversation, accountability. So could you expand a little bit on what accountability means and why that matters?
Yeah, it's interesting. When I first started really looking into it, it can mean multiple things, right? And I actually really felt like people struggled with that definition, and sometimes feeling like it can be a very negative thing. In one sense, it's this idea of ownership and personal accountability and this desire for, you know, that I feel that I can be accountable for something and it's mine to own. And another sense is what I find a lot of people find difficult is being able to say, how do you hold others accountable to what you have, you know, what you expect and some of those mutual commitments that you've made. So what happens when I think we're not able to do that is it creates mistrust and potentially confusion and maybe just opportunities for greater connections. So I think accountability is so essential. At its core, it's about ownership, but collective ownership. So it's really clear on what I own, what you own. But I also think it's a mix of mindset and skill set and the ability to really bring to life, like, how do I make these sort of conversations relevant and connected? How do I make sure that I feel comfortable in owning what I've committed to? How do I get others to feel connected to it as well so that we have cohesive teams and we just want to come to work every day? And especially in, you know, what I know is emotionally charged environments, quick, fast paced, lots to react in, those conversations become, I think, even more challenging for leaders and for teams. So to me, it's so essential to think about, how do I get accountability right? And how do I feel more comfortable, in particular, creating this culture of accountability within the team and not feel like I'm, you know, hitting people with a stick and trying to make people do things that they may not want to do.
Yeah, a couple of things that you spoke to there. Yeah, often when we think of accountability, it can be that negative kind of mindset. And I know we're going to talk about mindset a little bit later. Also, like what you said about that collective ownership piece. And I believe that you do quite a lot of research around the topic of accountability. And I heard or read somewhere that you've done a survey where it found that 93% of workers expected to be held accountable, but 66% felt that it was difficult to hold others accountable, which I can totally relate to personally. Why do you think that that might be?
It's interesting because it's such a conundrum. I think it's a little bit comparable to change. We want things to change and get better. And then all of a sudden someone says, well, you need to change. You're like, well, wait a second. And I think it's this idea of like, I really do expect people to hold me accountable if I'm not doing what I need to do. I want ownership. People tend to want, I mean, that's how you feel connected and like you're having an impact, is you feel like this is my role and I know what I can do and I know how it connects. But I think we get so nervous about when we feel like we're calling somebody out instead of maybe calling somebody in. And I know I just had this recently where I had somebody who was a project manager on a role and he wasn't showing up to our meetings. And of course, when we didn't show up to the meetings, everyone was like, well, what are we doing? He's the lead. He's just not attending. And I remember thinking, like, somebody needs to tell him that he needs to be at the meetings. But there was absolutely a discomfort in that. Like, you don't, I had respect for him. I feel like if I'm saying to him, why aren't you showing up? I'm, you know, I was creating this conflict. But I think, you know, I had to ask myself, like, isn't it kinder to share the feedback? And I think that's where we have to pause. And that's what the struggle is. Like, it's often even harder, I think, to hold people accountable that we like and enjoy, because you feel like, I don't want to sever the relationship. I don't want to rock the boat. I don't want to cause people to dislike me. I don't want to have an uncomfortable conversation, because often when we feel like, well, I was expecting them to do something and they're not, and it's affecting me, like, it is uncomfortable to have to lean into that and deal with that. So I think that's why, you know, I think there's an expectation that you can challenge me. You can tell me, please tell me if I'm not doing the right things for you, if I'm impacting you. I think we want that from others, but it's really uncomfortable to do. And it has to be done in a way that is respectful, which is still going to be uncomfortable, but it's got to be respectful.
Yeah, I really hear you on that uncomfortable kind of peace and stepping out of our comfort zone. But I guess the more that we do that, the easier it becomes. And that piece about calling people in rather than calling them out, kind of flipping the script a little bit.
Yeah. And I had an example where another example is when we had a meeting and, you know, I'm facilitating a meeting and everybody, I said, okay, lunch is going to come back. We're all going to come back at 1 o'clock. And one guy came back at 1 o'clock and all his colleagues were out of the room still. And he was frustrated. He's like, you said one, why aren't people here? And ironically, I'm teaching a facilitation session on accountability. So I think I need to talk about this. Like, we need to talk about this, because he was frustrated, but he wasn't necessarily going to say, why wasn't anybody here at one? Because I'm sitting here, it's my time being wasted. And so we had the conversation, like, was one not a reasonable expectation? What do you think happened? And it was about bringing it to light and recognizing the impact was somebody felt that, you know, why were they on time when others were not? And so that idea back to being collective and addressing it is what feels uncomfortable. But when you get there, it's really the people in the room were pretty comfortable to have the conversation if we included them in what the solution was. So, you know, next time we have a break, do you need a little bit longer time? Would that help? So we just having those conversations, I think, made a big difference. And it is, I think, just challenging. It's not a leader's problem. It's not necessarily the person who manages the whole team has to hold everybody else accountable. Anybody in the team can say, hey, you know, we had committed to this and it didn't happen as we'd hoped. What's behind that? So it's in the questioning.
Yeah, great. So a really wonderful strategy you shared there around honoring people's time. Are there any other strategies, any other ways that you could share with our listeners around how they can hold others accountable, especially during those maybe conversations? You touched on that a little bit earlier. Some are more difficult than others, depending on our relationships, not wanting to change those relationships. So, is there any specific strategies and ways that you could share with our listeners?
I think one of the key things is, again, is it going to be uncomfortable? And I think recognizing that it's okay. I think if we back to it being a collective issue, it's a we issue, not an I issue. So, thinking about it as an act of care and kindness, and using great questions to bring people into the dialogue. I think also the other thing I think helps to ground us in, the intent behind it when we're either giving feedback or setting expectations. If we're like, I'm not doing it to be mean, I'm not doing it to embarrass you, I'm doing it because I think that collectively, we can do better at this. And that sometimes comes down to always grounding ourselves back in the purpose of why we're here. I do a lot of work also with vet clinics as an example, in a similar chaotic, emotionally charged environment, and people work in different areas. And similar to how those are showing up in the center, there's a lot going on, and you're doing super important work, and you have a very, probably a very similar reason for coming to work every day, right? To having an impact on the children, supporting the families. And I think sometimes when we get into the how, this person's not doing this, or they haven't responded, can we ground ourselves back in that? Remember why we're here. Remember that we're all here for the same purpose. And I think, and it may be a different way of doing it, but how do we reconnect that and feel like I want to make our work better for the people that we serve and for the kids that we work with. And so that's about having the conversations about, we're not getting the work done, or these expectations are different or misaligned, and the impact is that, that for the parents and for the families, is it may not be as beneficial as it could be, or we could be offering them a better experience. So I think bringing us back to that common purpose is really important. And the last thing I'll say is, don't let things fester. If you saw my TED talk, I talk about the ideas of the moldy strawberries, and how we sometimes, if you think about it, if you don't remove a moldy strawberry from the pack, the rest go moldy. And we let these conversations, we get frustrated in the moment, and there's probably assumptions around that, and then we don't deal with it in the moment. And so someone may have a completely forgotten about it. They don't realize it. If we can actually deal with it really, really well and soon, then we have the ability to avoid to future resentment, which happens. And there's a really great book by Leanne Davey called The Good Fight, and she avoids conflict like the plague. And she talks about this concept of conflict debt, right? That if we don't address it, like a debt, builds up and builds up and builds up. And if we feel the tension because there's an issue that's not being addressed, you feel the tension, and it creates ripples effects, right, with everybody else and who you're working with, and you start to resent and be angry, and it impacts the relationships you have, and then it becomes a less fun place to work, right? If you're feeling like I've got this narrative in my head, and I haven't, and they're not doing the work, or they're lazy, or whatever story you start to tell yourself, is not going to be productive. So address it sooner. Make it about sort of we, and try to anchor it back in your purpose. That's probably the key things I would say there.
Yeah, some really great points, and I kind of hear you. If you don't deal with it, it doesn't go away and it can get worse. So we will put the link to Christy's TED Talk. It is a really great TED Talk. We'll pop that in the show notes. So check that out. Hear all about the moldy strawberry and the pipe cleaner as well there. So Christy, you spoke to the why of our purpose, and you also spoke to expectations. So I'm curious as why you feel it's important that we set expectations with the staff. And do you have any tips for our listeners when setting work-related expectations?
Absolutely, because a lot of times, we talk about communication always being challenged. It often comes down to misaligned expectations. I expect this. I thought this was going to happen. I thought this was your job. I thought it was going to happen at this time. And the reality is they had a different perception. So if you don't have that foundational conversation, I can share a very recent kind of, family example of my husband and we're buried in snow here in this, balmy January right now. And so asking my kids to shovel the snow, all the kids got out and shoveled the snow yesterday. And then he kind of said a little bit off, probably not as direct and specific as it could be. He's like, we shoveled out mom's car. I'll take it to work tomorrow, but can we shovel the rest tomorrow? Well, the kids had a snow day and he came home from work and the car was still buried under snow. And so all that to say, was his expectation of what he wanted them to do clearly outlined? Was it, you need to do this and you need to do it before I get back from work? So it's about being specific to what I expect as opposed to more. We generally will say something like almost to soften our language, but then we're not giving clarity to what we really want. And I think that that's one thing is to feel okay to go, this is what I'm hoping from you. Now, from a work environment, you're probably not going to go say, go do this in the same way that you might tell your teenage kids to shovel the driveway. But what you might say is, can you do this by this time? Does that work for you? And I was hoping it would be ready for this. And so that specificity is really important because people, I think they say, well, I mentioned it. I said we should do it, but it wasn't clear who, what, and when. And the other thing as part of that is just kind of like the why we just talked about is a lot of times in setting expectations, we even if you do the who, what, and when, we forget the why. And the why ties it back to why does it matter? Why is this important to me? What's in it for me? Why does it impact the team if I don't do it? Because if I feel there's a reason behind it, if I buy into the reason behind it, I'm often much more likely to do it. I feel more committed to it. And so if we're saying, the reason we're doing this is because, I can see a gap in again and what's happening with the children. I can see that this particular learning agenda isn't having the same impact. So why am I asking you to do this? Maybe what feels like extra work, it's for a purpose. And so back to if you can tie it to the bigger purpose, but also just the why behind why I'm asking it. And it might be the why it helps me, the why it helps you, the why it helps the family, whatever it is. If that why is there and the who, what, when is there, then your expectations are super clear. And the last add is a dialogue. Back to the we instead of the I. If you don't just say, what does it make sense, but what does this actually look like for you? What support do you need from me? All of those questions that become part of the conversation and expectation setting. So they can be, like, you can draw people into the what, when, why, and how as well. You can say, if we accomplish this, like, when's a good time to do it? What do you think would work? What is the best way to do it? And this is where situational leadership comes in, another thing I do a lot of work in, which is how do you change your level of direction. So, depending if someone doesn't know how to do the job, you have to be very clear in your expectations. This is how you need to do it. This is when you need to do it. And check in with me. Yeah, if you have people who are more skilled in their job or in a particular task, then you can be much more open to say, tell me what you think is the right way to do this. This is what we're trying to achieve. We're trying to make it safer. We're trying to make it a better experience. We're trying to make it easier for people. So how do you think we can do this? So depending on the people that you're working with and their ability to actually do the tasks, you can really change your approach. But it comes back to, again, the collective we, and not just the directive, this is what I need from you.
Right, some wonderful things there. That example that you were giving of your husband, that made me kind of think of the royal we as the phrase that's often used, the kind of you piece there. So some really great pieces that you mentioned there, that purpose, the why, the clarity, and you also spoke to what I was hearing through was, everybody's voice being heard and that collective peace and that negotiation, so important.
And maybe just one thing I'll build, because the other areas that leaders, I think, get it wrong is you want to be supportive. And I do find clear in this environment, you probably have very supportive, caring individuals who want to support each other, which isn't always the case in every work environment. But I suspect in the centers, that's quite a bit. And so if anything, those individuals are very concerned about overburdening people. I don't want to set expectations because I know you've got a lot on your plate. I know it's hard for you right now. I know you're going through things. And those are all important considerations, but be careful because what sometimes happens there is you take the task back on yourself. So you're like, okay, I'll do it for you. Okay, I'll figure it out for you. Okay, you don't know how, let me go back and see if I can figure out and tell you. And it's a really a good video. I can send you this as a link as well, called Monkey Management. And it's that concept of we take monkeys on our backs that are somebody else's monkeys. And it's that idea of, because we care and because we're problem solvers and because we know how to do the job, it's really easy to say, let me do that for you, when somebody says, I don't know how to do this, or I'm frustrated. And that idea of it, taking ownership away from somebody, one, doesn't allow them to figure it out and grow and learn themselves, but it also means that you have a lot of weight on you. And I see a lot of leaders have that challenge because I just don't know how. And this is coming down to sort of delegating a little bit, but I feel like we solving other people's problem is one of the challenges we have in accountability, because one, we may not want to have that difficult conversation, or we just care so deeply we're just worried that if we're going to give them the task, then they can't do it. Or a lot of times that narrative is, it's just faster if I do it myself, right? I don't know if you've ever said that, but that's what the trap we get into. And then the people that we're working with are like, well, they're going to do it, so I don't need to do it. And then you end up being ton of tasks on your shoulders and going, how come I'm the only one doing stuff around here? And that can happen if you're the manager. That can happen if you're just even working. It's like, you're the doer, you get it done. I don't want to rely on somebody else. But if you step back and go, wait a second, like, I'm taking on the monkeys of other people, then, and what monkey should be mine and what monkey should be yours, then you have some clarity to expectations again collectively. And that I really help have people feel less resentful of that they're taking on too much or that they're burnt out.
Yeah, and burnout is a really huge issue in our sector at the moment. So thinking about how we can kind of share that load and have, faith in our teams that they can do that. Often when we think about our children, it's very much, we're not doing everything for them. We're giving them the skills, we're empowering them, the opportunities, the experiences, but thinking about how we translate that to the adults that we work with as well.
That's a great connection point. Absolutely.
I'm very curious about the monkey management. I'm gonna look that one out myself there. So just shifting gears a little bit. So when we're thinking about feedback, could you share how leaders might be able to provide feedback in a constructive manner that enhances and supports accountability?
Absolutely. First, I will say that if anybody has learned the hamburger model of feedback, or what might be referred to as like the crap sandwich of feedback, which is say something good, say something, constructive, say something good, don't do that anymore. That would be my first encouragement. And that was sort of leadership 101. I know that's what I learned. Reason being is it's formulaic. People feel like, okay, if I hear something good, I know I'm going to hear something bad. And the good either gets lost, or frankly, the bad either gets lost. So it's not a useful model. Instead, one of my biggest encouragements is be giving positive feedback as often as possible when you catch someone doing something amazing. And then when you give constructive feedback, it's at a different time. Again, it's right after the behavior is seen. And if you're giving positive feedback a lot of the time, then it doesn't feel like, okay, now I'm hitting you with some laundry list of all the things you've done wrong. So sometimes people feel like, well, I'm doing a performance review, so now's my time to give the feedback. That is absolutely, by that time, if you're doing performance reviews at all, people should be well aware of some of the things they're working on because you've given feedback so much. One of my favorite models that I've kind of built upon is SBI. It's a very structured way of giving feedback, and I'll explain it briefly. So, although I've added a letter to it, the first being intent. So instead of the S, I start with an I, and that is, again, why am I giving this feedback? Connecting back to the why. Like, I wanted to share what I observed because I really think we have an impact to I think we have an ability to impact the families better. I think this would be more supportive of the children. Whatever it is, what's my intention of giving you feedback? The S, the B, and the I are the situation. What specific situation did I observe? What behaviors did I see? And what impact might it had? So maybe I wanted to share what I observed during pickup time yesterday. The handover felt rushed. I know it was busy, but families rely on that connection. That's the impact, right? And the last piece is really then taking it, what's the future forward? What's my expectation? So it's reaffirming the expectation. And the great thing about this model, ISBI, is it can now be also be used for positive, right? I saw yesterday the way you talked with that parent. You made the time to have that conversation, even though it was busy. And that was, the impact of that was they felt heard and we de-escalated a situation. So it's really connecting the specificity of the moment with the impact it's having and also your intention. And again, as many times as possible, positive, positive, positive. I'm catching somebody. And this doesn't have to be the manager ever. It can be anybody saying, you know what? I saw what you did there. I saw you handle that difficult situation. I saw how you dealt with that. I saw how quickly you did that. Whatever it is, use as many moments as possible because then feedback becomes part of who we are. Right? It becomes a recognition. And then the times when I say, you know what, that was a struggle for you. I'll give you some feedback. What I observed was this. Next time, maybe try this. So I think the feedback becomes less concerning because you know that I have your best interest at heart. I know that I'm giving feedback for a greater purpose. And again, it's not just to knock you down. It will still feel uncomfortable. Feedback will always be hard when it's constructive. But I go back to if it's a act of kindness, then accountability in itself can be an act of kindness. So if it comes from that place and the intention is good, and if you also, the other really big thing to say on feedback is ask for it. Ask for it all the time. I used to have a colleague, and every time we had a meeting at the end, he'd say, "How did I show up today? Like, what did you think? What were some of the things?" The language I like to use is, "What went well? Even better if." So what could I have done even better? And you have to ask for that because people won't, and people will still probably say, "Well, no, you did great." And that's not really that helpful either. What could I have done better? So the more you ask for it and role model it and say, like, "I want to know what I could have done better," other people will step up and do the same. So be the person that asks for feedback. And don't just ask for feedback to hope for the pat on the back, which I can claim to have sometimes doing, but ask for, like, tell me what went well and what would have been even better. How I handled that situation.
I kind of relate to that when you ask for feedback in. It's like everything was great, but it's kind of how do I improve? How do I move forward without that kind of outside perspective? And I did kind of when you said referred to the sandwich, the crap sandwich. I came across that a little while ago. Refer to something a little stronger. We won't say that on air.
Yeah, I avoided using that. Yeah.
That really made me kind of think. Reframe how you think about giving feedback because everything kind of gets lost if you don't have being specific, which you were speaking to earlier. And how can we move forward? How can we address this together? And I really like that model that you shared, the SBI model, really great model that we can take on board. Maybe we can share something about that in the show notes for our listeners.
Absolutely. Yep.
Wonderful. Okay. So we are coming towards the end of our time together. And I've heard a lot of talk about Carol Dweck's growth mindset. And I really like that growth mindset piece. But I wanted to have some time to dive a little bit more deeper into the accountability mindset. And I know you speak about that on your TED talk. So could you explain a little bit more about that in depth and how leaders can model an accountability mindset?
Yeah, thank you for asking that because I like you also, like I'm obsessed a bit with the growth mindset, and we're doing a lot of work with some of our clients now to say how do we bring ourselves out of what couldn't, can draw us into the scarcity mindset. And I do think I talked earlier, accountability has those kind of three concepts, which starts with mindset and then is skill set, and then is actually tool set, is the sort of the three ways I think about it. But if you, the mindset is that, and I share this in my TED talk of the different ways we get it wrong and how do we find that balance, is we become pointy. You referred to my pipe cleaner analogy, pointy, where we go to this point of blame, right? Which is easy to do. It's human nature that when someone isn't doing what we need, we kind of go to this place of blame where we're like, well, somebody must have got this wrong. What did somebody else do? And we get into this place of who did it instead of how do we fix it. And so I think having that mindset of how do we fix it back to that collective piece is really important. And then the other side of that, and again, I find people fall into this trap, is we're soft instead of pointy, where we actually avoid the conversation, right? And we're too uncomfortable. And we've talked about that a little bit already. And so the mindset is kind of recognizing that it comes from a place of kindness, that it allows people to ask, what's my part in this? You take responsibility instead of deflecting blame or avoiding the conversation. And it has clarity to what role can I play in this? And that you can model that just the way I suggested you model asking feedback. It's modeling that I take responsibility for this concept. Another link I can share with you, Jeanette, we're going to have too many links in here, but is a concept called above and below the line. And I love it because it just says, it reminds us that, we're bringing ourselves above the line when we're from a place of, I own it. It's a me problem. Even if somebody else is part of the problem, I know my part in it. And when we go below the line, which again is human nature, we go from a place of blame and victim mentality. And it's a matter of, I think, always finding the way of what's going to bring you up. And sometimes it's the people around you. When I facilitate these conversations, I say, what brings you to a place of where you can take ownership? Because when we're in a burnt out place, which I know is sometimes going to be the case, and we're having a bad day, it is actually really hard to get ourselves out of it. So what are the things for you that are going to help you be in a frame of mind where you can see your own role in it, be the role model to do that, and try to get yourself out of that place of blame and be confident in your ability to have the difficult conversation instead of avoiding it. So it might be, you know what, I need a 10-minute walk, right? Or I need to go talk to a friend, or I just need to read. For whatever those things are, my encouragement would be, think about those things that allow you to reset. Because if you're not in a mindset of growth, which is why it ties in, you cannot step into those difficult conversations. You cannot see your role. And then it's really easy to fall into that victim, woe is me, which we're all allowed to be in at some point in time. But the goal is to pull yourself out of it and be in a place where you can lead with
Right,
confidence.
lovely. So I keep hearing coming through a lot from our conversation today around ownership and kindness coming through. So before we finish up, is there anything else that you would like to share with our listeners?
I think the main thing is probably summarizing what you said, right? That idea of accountability that can sometimes feel negative and hard, and it is. And care and kindness, they're not opposites. They're the same thing. So when you call somebody in, when you bring somebody in and you give them feedback, like it's for the benefit of them. And I think it's a little bit like be kind, not nice, if that makes sense, and will always be nice. But I think the kindness is seeing the fact that you see something in somebody, you know they can do the work, and you want to empower them. And by giving them ownership, you are empowering them. And by giving them feedback, you are helping them to develop and grow. And by setting expectations, you're setting them up for success. And the more you can, again, role model that it's okay to make mistakes. I'm gonna ask for feedback. I'm gonna own up when I'm gonna take ownership. And the more you can role model that, I think to me that's the essence of accountability, is that we all collectively feel like this is this we're all in it together. We're all in it together, that we serve one common purpose. Sometimes it's clunky, sometimes it's messy. We have each other's backs. But the reason that we have these difficult conversations is because we're kind and we care about each
Yeah.
other.
And you were saying about asking, and sometimes we need that permission to ask.
And one more thing to that, sorry, I'm just thinking I wanted to offer out because I know we're going to have lots of links here, but the other offer is that I talk about this concept of being pointy and soft. And I do think there's a bit of a natural preference going one or the other. I probably think we all do each of those things. But I do have a little bit of an accountability quiz that I'll also share that you can kind of understand for yourself, where might be your go-to strategy and some things to think about. So when you're in this blame mindset, how do you get out of it? If you're more of an avoider, how do you get out of it? So I'll make sure you have that link as well if people want to sort of take that quiz for themselves and kind of see where they land.
Yeah, great. I think that would be really, really helpful. And taking that quiz and objectively looking at where we are and how we can move forward. So thank you so much for sharing your time with me and our listeners today, Christy. It's been an absolute pleasure speaking with you this morning about what an accountability mindset is and how one can incorporate that concept within their work and their practice.
Thank you, Jeanette. I'm really happy to be here.
So that wraps up our conversation on building a culture of accountability. Thank you for joining us for this latest episode of the ECCDC podcast and for Christy for generously sharing her time with us. And some practical strategies that can be utilized to build a culture of accountability, as well as many useful tools and resources. Please see the show notes below for all of the links that were shared. Some of my key takeaways were regarding the need to be kind and caring towards each other when building a culture of accountability, and for the need to develop an accountability mindset. If you liked this podcast, please leave a comment below. And if you haven't already done so, please subscribe.